brutal war on Palestinians in Gaza. And Bahrain's National Assembly is pressing to reverse the normalization of the country's relations with Israel in reaction to the regime's genocide in Gaza. Thanks for joining us. Israel keeps pressing ahead with its deadly war on Gaza for over a month now. In every single area of the besieged Palestinian territory, sounds of bombardment are followed by screams of mothers losing their kids, as well as cries of children whose parents are killed by the regime. The total death toll from the Israeli war since October the 7th has topped 10,000. Most of the victims are women and children, as the regime keeps raining down bombs on residential buildings. In the latest of such airstrikes, 11 members of a family were killed in the southern city of Khan Yunis. Medical facilities are not safe from the regime's onslaught as well. Despite international condemnation, Israeli warplanes have targeted Gaza's largest medical facility, the Al-Shifa Hospital, which hosts 170 injured people and hundreds of other displaced Palestinians. That attack left one Palestinian killed and several others injured. Children's Hospital in Gaza was also hit by Israeli shelling.
It was about 10 o'clock. The hospital and its interior eastern gate were targeted at the same time. Accordingly, a large number of ambulances, public transport, and staff cars were damaged. We found a large number of martyrs and injured in the cars and the corridors of the hospital. Critical injuries were transferred to Al-Shifa Hospital with the help of our colleagues in the emergency department.
Israeli strikes in Gaza pushed hospitals on the verge of collapse. The Palestinian Red Crescent has issued an urgent appeal to international health and relief organizations to provide much-needed aid and supplies to hospitals in the Gaza Strip, warning that fuel reserves at Al-Quds Hospital will soon run out. Israel has barred any fuel transport to the Strip, leaving hospitals increasingly unable to treat the injured. The military wing of the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has continued its retaliatory strikes against the Israeli military that is pushing ahead with the ground invasion of Gaza. The Al-Qassam Brigade says it has dealt a blow to the regime's military by destroying three tanks, a carrier, and a bulldozer belonging to Israel. It added that resistance fighters used Al-Yassin missiles to target Israel's armored vehicles approaching the Al-Shati refugee camp. Israel claimed on Monday that its land assault has split the besieged Palestinian territory into northern and southern Gaza. The U.S. has been fully supporting Israel during its war in Gaza, and now the administration of President Joe Biden is reportedly planning a $320 million transfer of precision bombs to Israel. According to the Wall Street Journal, the White House has sent a formal notification to congressional leaders for the planned delivery of the so-called Spice Family gliding bomb assemblies. The bombs are a type of precision-guided weapon fired by warplanes. This comes amid growing concerns across the globe over the high number of civilian casualties caused by Israel's war on Gaza. The American administration's unconditional support for Israel's war has also drawn criticism within the U.S. establishment. According to the U.S. news outlet Politico, State Department officials have demanded that Washington publicly criticize Israel's violations of international norms over its war on Gaza and its support for settler violence in the occupied West Bank. Bahrain's National Assembly is pressing to reverse the normalization of relations between the Persian Gulf Kingdom and Israel. That's according to the Deputy Speaker of Bahrain's legislative body. In an interview, Abdul Nabi Salman said the demands of the Bahraini lawmakers are a reflection of the aspirations of their people. He said the most important public demand is severing all ties with Israel and canceling the Abraham Accords. Ultimately, any decision on Bahraini-Israeli ties is taken by the Bahraini king and his government. Bahrain recalled its ambassador to Israel last week amid the regime's atrocities in Gaza. Flights between Bahrain and Israel were also suspended. Bahrain was one of the few Arab nations that signed the unpopular U.S.-backed normalization agreements with Israel in 2020. At least 164 Palestinians have been killed by Israeli forces and settlers in the occupied West Bank since the war began on October 7. The latest wave of violence has taken the lives of two Palestinians. Our correspondent in Ramallah, Mona Kandil, earlier joined us with the latest.
This morning we are speaking about two Palestinians have been killed by the Israeli forces in the early hours of Tuesday. A Palestinian was shot and killed in the village of Beit Hanan, northwest Al-Quds, and another Palestinian in Sa'ir, this village northwest Al-Khalil, when the Israeli forces raided this area and the clashes had erupted. Today we are speaking about over 100 and Palestinians had been killed since the 7th of October. Over 162 Palestinians were shot and killed by the Israeli soldiers. The Israelis raided the city of Tul Kerem as well in an operation lasted for over 5 hours. Clashes had been erupted, exchange of fire between Palestinian fighters and Israeli forces. This operation came after only several hours from an assassination of four Palestinian fighters when undercover units raided the Tul Kerem, surrounded a vehicle, opened a fire at the vehicle, and killed four Palestinian fighters. Two of them were recognized as the commander of Al-Qassam Brigade and the commander of the Rapid Response Battalion. This group, that is the armed wing of the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigades. Over 30 Palestinians were detained this morning in the occupied West Bank, including university students, journalists, and political experts in the Israeli affairs.
Peter Ford is a former British ambassador to Syria who joins us from Manchester in order to share with us his thoughts on the Gaza war. Peter Ford, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
I think it's worth starting off with the announcement that the U.S. has made. I've asked this repeatedly from different analysts, and I'd like to find out from you what you think when the U.S. announces on day 32 that it's time for the Congress to approve $320 million worth of what it calls precision bombs in order to reduce the casualties that are happening in the Gaza Strip. That's one of the aims that it has stated. I'm wondering if they actually think about what they say when 10,000 Palestinians have been killed, and on the 32nd day they figured it's time for these bombs to be sent to Israel. Do they realize what they have said?
It's more clear every day that the Americans have completely lost the plot, completely lost control over their client, Israel, unable to bend Israel to America's will, even though it's America which is providing all the bombs. The Americans are absolutely desperate. All this traveling around the region by Secretary Blinken, by the head of the CIA, is just displacement activity to hide the fact that they have no power, that they've lost control entirely over the Middle East. They can't even control their own client. That is what we're seeing. But meanwhile, more significantly, we see in the last hours that Iran and Saudi Arabia are going to meet at the highest level. This is a good response to the absence of American leadership.
Well, since you've mentioned that, what do you think may be in the works? Of course, that's speculation purely. We know that the U.S. I think the U.S. Defense Secretary met with the Saudi Defense Secretary, if I'm not mistaken, on a couple of occasions. I'm wondering what Saudi Arabia's move should be in this case, for lack of a better word. Of course, preventative moves should have been made earlier. By many accounts, many are saying that overall the West Asia region did not or has not done enough in order to make sure that something is done about the carnage that's taking place. But what do you foresee that Iran and Saudi Arabia can do? Iran is doing its best to hold itself back by issuing the warnings that it has issued to the U.S. But Iran, Saudi Arabia, in conjunction with each other, what they can do in order to do something about this war?
Well, Saudi's role now is extremely important. They are signaling to the Americans that they will not be panicked. They will not join the alliance against the resistance and against Iran. That is an extremely important contribution to controlling the situation. Very wisely, the leaders of Iran and Saudi Arabia got together several months ago to normalize their relationship. And we are seeing now the fruits for both countries of this normalization. Saudi Arabia refuses to be put in the front line by America. Saudi Arabia is also refusing to join American plans to create an Arab so-called peace force to occupy Gaza and to act as Israel's police. So the Saudi role essentially is to say no to the United States and all their half-baked fantasy initiatives.
We've seen the buildup of U.S. Armaments in the region, the most recent one being the deployment of a U.S. nuclear missile submarine that it has dispatched. One of the things that the U.S. says is to prevent the spread of the Gaza war to other fronts. Another reason that they have said in terms of the, I guess, military asset deployment is that we need to defend ourselves. I'm wondering what the U.S. means when it's on Syrian soil illegally and then it has to defend itself. It doesn't quite go with logic. It's there without the invitation of the government, illegally, but it feels like it has to defend itself?
Look, there are two kinds of logic. There's normal human logic and there's American logic. This means that when America breaks the law, for example, by having illegal bases in Syria and unwanted bases in Iraq, that's fine. But if anybody else, like Russia, tries to do something similar, that's illegal. But in the real world, what matters here is that the Americans are very afraid of losing those bases in Syria and Iraq. That's what all this signaling is about. And when the Americans say they want to avoid regional spread, this is what they mean. Please don't drive us out of our bases in Syria and Iraq. That is the translation of what they mean. They also mean don't make life more complicated for us and the Israelis. Let the Israelis get on unhindered with destroying Gaza when they say stop regional spread.
All right, thank you very much for that. Peter Ford, former British ambassador to Syria, there talking to us from Manchester on the phone. Thank you. Moving on, the UN Secretary General has renewed his call for an immediate and unconditional humanitarian ceasefire in Gaza, noting that the situation in the besieged territory is a crisis of humanity. Antonio Guterres warned that Israel's relentless bombardment of the Gaza Strip is turning the enclave into a graveyard for children.
I'm deeply concerned about clear violations of international humanitarian law that we are witnessing. Let me be clear. No party to an armed conflict is above international humanitarian law. Ladies and gentlemen of the press, Gaza is becoming a graveyard for children. Hundreds of girls and boys are reportedly being killed or injured every day. More journalists have reportedly been killed over a four-week period than in any conflict in at least three decades. More United Nations aid workers have been killed than in any comparable period in the history of our organization. I salute all those who continue their life-saving work despite the overwhelming challenges and risks. And the unfolding catastrophe makes the need for a humanitarian ceasefire more urgent with every passing hour. The parties to the conflict, and indeed the international community, face an immediate and fundamental responsibility to stop the inhuman collective suffering and dramatically expand humanitarian aid to Gaza.
More reactions to the Israeli atrocities in Gaza. The Jordanian Prime Minister says all options are on the table for how Amman deals with the regime's aggression and its repercussions. Bishr al-Khazaune called Israel's attacks on Gaza brutal. He said these raids do not discriminate between civilian and military targets and extend to safe areas and ambulances. The premier rejects Israel's claims that its siege of Gaza is in self-defense. Jordan has already recalled its ambassador from Israel in protest of the regime's deadly onslaught. The United Arab Emirates has also decried Israel's war on Gaza.
Killing and maiming of children, attacks on schools and hospitals in the Gaza Strip, and denying children access to humanitarian assistance are all very grave violations against children. We call on all parties to fully comply with their obligations under international humanitarian law, including the protection of civilians and civilian infrastructure. We reiterate the need for the parties to take measures to ensure...
The UAE's UN envoy said that Israel attacks civilian facilities in violation of international law. Nusseibeh described the deaths of humanitarian workers in Israeli attacks on Gaza tragic. She was speaking to reporters alongside her Chinese counterpart after an emergency meeting of the UN Security Council. The Chinese UN envoy also called for an urgent humanitarian truce in Gaza.
We call for an urgent humanitarian ceasefire. The Secretary General just made the same call this morning, a humanitarian ceasefire now. This is desperately needed to enable full, rapid, safe, and unhindered humanitarian access, including for UN and humanitarian personnel, consistent with international humanitarian law. We urge all parties to take steps urgently.
The Chinese official described the situation in Gaza as catastrophic. He said Palestinian civilians have been deprived of necessities which are essential for their survival. Israel has been defying the growing calls for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza. With that, we come to an end for this edition of World News. Thanks for being with us. It's bye-bye for now.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
The limelight. as the chorus for an end to the Zionist regime's genocidal campaign in the besieged Gaza Strip grows louder, it is becoming increasingly clear who the real protagonist and mastermind is. The United States regime is not merely complicit, but is the architect and mastermind of the Zionist regime's Gaza genocide. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Press TV noted, while the overwhelming majority of countries voted in favor of the humanitarian truce in Gaza during the UN General Assembly session recently, the US and some of its vassal states opposed the resolution. The vote laid bare which side Americans and their allies were on, the side of occupation and apartheid. It came days after U.S. President Joe Biden dashed off to Tel Aviv in a show of support for the Zionist regime, even as the Israeli regime warplanes continued to pummel densely populated civilian areas in Gaza. On the eve of Biden's visit, an Israeli regime warplane targeted a hospital in northern Gaza, killing more than 700 people, including patients and those who had taken refuge at the hospital after being displaced. Biden refused to condemn the Zionist regime, rather blamed the other side for the bombing, parroting the Israeli narrative. He had previously also peddled the Zionist lie about children being beheaded. During the whirlwind trip, he even described himself as a Zionist and repeated a line he infamously said as a senator in 1986, "If there were not an Israel, we'd have to invent one." Biden, however, isn't the only American batting for the occupying regime and preventing efforts aimed at de-escalation. Many current and former U.S. officials have come out openly in support of the Zionist regime. Antony Blinken, U.S. Secretary of State, who was one of the first foreign officials to land in Tel Aviv following the events of October 7th, has made a series of not-so-diplomatic statements in recent days. In an interview with NBC recently, the top American diplomat said that Israel should already be devising a strategy of who rules the besieged Gaza Strip after Hamas is removed from the scene. He was only echoing what the Zionist regime Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said earlier about the elimination of Hamas being the defined goal for the regime in its latest genocidal campaign in the barricaded territory. A former U.S. military official, Barry McFerry, speaking on MSNBC recently, said the U.S. is likely to directly intervene with air and naval strikes if the Zionist regime's existence is threatened. The unconditional and uncritical support for the Zionist regime from the top tier American past and present leadership has prompted many pundits to suggest that Washington is the key player in this war. It's not merely complicit in what's unfolding in the besieged Gaza Strip, but it is the engineer, the architect, and the main mastermind of this genocidal campaign against the people of Palestine. As leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei said in a speech recently, The U.S. is a definite accomplice of the Zionist regime, and its hands are drenched in the blood of the oppressed. He remarked, actually, it is the U.S. that is somehow managing the crime that is being committed in Gaza. The U.S. is the one that is managing things. These words carry tremendous weight and establish the fact that the regime in Tel Aviv is remotely controlled by Washington, as both need each other to carry out destabilizing activities in the region. It's the well-established fact that the Zionist regime killing machine is funded by Washington, including over $3.8 billion annual military assistance the U.S. provides annually to the regime to purchase weaponry. In recent weeks, there have also been reports about two U.S. aircraft carriers being dispatched to the region, a move basically meant to provide military cover to the vulnerable entity in Tel Aviv. All these developments suggest beyond doubt that the United States basically owns this war that is increasingly looking unwinnable for the weaker-than-spider-web Israeli regime. Even though Biden's deputy Kamala Harris insists that Washington has no intention to deploy combat troops to the occupied territories, reports suggest American boots are already on the ground there. There have also been reports about the U.S. secretly expanding its military base on the occupied land near Gaza, which again points to American complicity and a key role in what's unfolding in the territory. Intercept reported that Pentagon awarded a multi-million dollar contract to build its secret base deep inside the occupied territories, just 20 miles from Gaza, codenamed Site 512. The classified base will include what the report called a life support facility for the dying regime. The report stated, though President Joe Biden and the White House insist that there are no plans to send U.S. troops to Israel amid its war on Hamas, a secret U.S. military presence in Israel already exists. As Ali Akbar Velayati, the Iranian leader's senior advisor, stated recently, the Israeli regime will not even last one day without the support of the United States and European countries. So, it becomes clear that the occupying regime cannot go ahead or sustain any military aggression without Washington's green light, as well as political and military patronage. In the case of the ongoing bombing campaign in the Gaza Strip, which will eventually lead to the demise of the illegitimate regime, the United States is not only complicit but the mastermind.
Joining us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to the Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Thanks so much for being with us. 2,500 people a week have been murdered in the Gaza Strip by the Israeli regime during the last 31 days. More than 10,000 people have been killed, 70% of them women and children. 25,000 Palestinians have been wounded this 1 month. But none of this, none of it seems to matter to regimes around the world as the green light for the Holocaust continues to be given to the racist Israeli regime. However, globally, people are flexing their muscles against their Western regimes and beyond. The true face of the Israeli regime is being revealed as the entity's leaders call for nuking Gaza and say that Palestinians are not human, even justifying genocide. A new world order is on the horizon, and the pendulum is swinging. I'd like to welcome my guests to this program. Elijah McNear, journalist and political analyst out of Brussels. And Yves Engler, author and political activist out of Montreal. So thank you both for being with me.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Let's start it off in Brussels. And Elijah, the Secretary General of the United Nations, Antonio Guterres, has demanded an immediate ceasefire in Gaza. Why do you think that it has taken him 31 days to demand this ceasefire?
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming.
It is not a question of taking him 31 days before tackling the problem that is happening and the war that is happening against the civilians in Gaza. It is because he doesn't have any power. I remember when he has confronted the Israeli ambassador, telling him that the problem didn't start on the 7th of October, but it started 50 years ago. And this is when Israel demanded his immediate resignation. It's because the United Nations is an institution powerless unless it fits with the objectives of the United States of America. When the Americans and the Israelis agree that this war should continue because Israel has failed to achieve any of its objectives, then the Americans acknowledge the fact that killing civilians is the topic of the Israeli army, and that the United Nations is impotent and has no power whatsoever to stop the war, particularly when we have 88 personnel of the United Nations that have been killed by the Israeli indiscriminate bombardment to Gaza, where the Israelis bombarded schools that belong to the United Nations, convoys, and is indiscriminately bombing the city, pushing for an ethnic cleansing and committing crime against humanity. The United Nations, unfortunately, it is not a body that can dictate the rules. It is not a body that has an army per se, unless by its members, and has very little to do because it is the will of the superpower, the United Nations of America, the United States of America, for this war to continue, and reject any call for a ceasefire, even by Russia, China, and 120 countries that at the United Nations General meeting agreed on a ceasefire in Gaza, but that fell on deaf ears.
Well, Yves, do you think this request for a ceasefire by the UN Secretary General doesn't mean anything? Will it be adhered to by the Israeli regime in your perspective?
I don't think it will be adhered to, but I do think it's better than not doing it. So I think that, and as you pointed out, it's outrageous that it's taken this long for Guterres to come out with this. And it's definitely, in my opinion, it reflects the fact that the U.S. and the principal NATO countries are so gung-ho in backing Israel. Now, Israel clearly doesn't. Israel is you know, slaughtering people with reckless abandon. The only thing realistically right now that's going to rein in the fanatics in Israel is the U.S. Empire and Washington finally saying, you know, stop the wholesale slaughter. Now, it does seem that the U.S. is happy to, you know, they want this to escalate. They seem like they're happy to, certainly the killing in Gaza, they're more than fine with. And possibly they're happy to even engage in something more broadly in the region. So we know where this all goes. We still don't know, but I think it's definitely good that the Secretary General has firmed up his language. It's outrageous it's taken this long. And it definitely does speak to a UN that is not reflective of international opinion, because people around the world, mass numbers coming out onto the streets.
What about that, Elijah? You heard what Yves said, that basically he feels that the United States is quite okay with what is taking place in Gaza. If you agree with that, what is it that the United States is gaining from this genocide that's taking place in Gaza that they are giving the green light to the Israeli regime?
Well, the Israelis are aiming to achieve some gains or some kind of victory that are failing to do so far after 4 weeks of the war. So the Americans are giving time for the Israeli. They're gaining time so the Israeli can achieve something, or at least succeed in occupying the northern part of Gaza, where the main theater of operation is happening now. Unfortunately for the Israelis, that the Palestinian resistance is not ready to let go, is not ready to allow the Israeli tanks to move into Gaza and occupy it, and it's fighting it. It is fighting it in urban war that they have excelled in doing it so. Is inflicting heavy damages on the Israeli tanks and military personnel, and is driving the Israeli crazy to the point that they're trying to flatten everything in the north of Gaza, Shujaia, Beit Hanun, and they're not managing to advance. On the contrary, yesterday they withdrew 1 kilometer of the 5-6 kilometers that where they have advanced. And we're talking about a tiny area that is between 5 to 6 miles wide and then around 26 miles long. And the operation is happening in the first part of it, not all of it. So if the Israelis just want to park their 1,400 tanks in Gaza, they can fill it up. However, we understand that the resistance is not allowing the Israelis to move in, and this is what the Americans cannot wait for very long to give the Israeli enough time, because the public opinion is turning against the massacre of the Israelis. There are images of children, more than 4,000 children have been killed, 2,200 women, and all that on TV, that the Americans can no longer hide it, cannot hide behind Israel has a right to defend itself, because Israel is in occupation. Therefore, there is a limit where they can abuse of their double standard and hypocrisy. And this limit, we understand, normally in all the Israelis' war, when the United Nations chief starts to talk about ceasefire, it means there is a very short time when the Americans are going to come up also with a demand, but not due to humanitarian reasons, but to save the Israelis from their trap, because okay. They're not achieving what they want to achieve.
Well, Eves, since Sunday night, last night, the Israeli regime admits that it has conducted 450 airstrikes on Gaza. This is just last night. What does this mean for a civilian area? And what does this mean to be taking place live on our screens?
Well, it means that the governments backing this in Canada, the U.S., are sociopaths. That's what we're seeing. We're seeing the political elite in Canada, the U.S., that are endorsing this just outrageous level of violence. And in fact, not even just endorsing it, if you were to pick up the papers in this country, you think that the Israelis are the victims. I think Israeli society, the culture has gotten extremely, extremely fascistic. Obviously, the Jewish supremacist fanatics who are in charge of the government have been made very clear that they want to drive out Palestinians. They want to steal as much land as possible. They probably won't stop with just the West Bank and Gaza. They probably want to go even further. That's always been an important strain of Zionism going back a century. The maximalist Zionists think it should be, the Jewish state should be, multiple times bigger than it currently is. So all of that is in the background. And they have this powerful military with the backing of the world's hegemon. And they're just... to just using, the arms companies always like the fact that the bombs are being used, and Israel's doing a lot of that. It's absolutely stunning to sort of live through this this political culture in Canada, where all of the main politicians, they all are backing this, while the images of Palestinian babies being taken out from under the rubble. Anyone can see those in near virtual time. It really is a serious condemnation of the political culture in Canada, the U.S.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, Elijah, your thoughts on this, that could you have ever imagined that in 2023, 10,000 people could be slaughtered in the way that the Palestinians have been in Gaza, and nothing is done?
There are 101,000 Palestinians that have been killed since 1948. And nothing has been done. There is an Oslo agreement that the Americans thought that they pulled out, and they have reached a two-state solution, and nothing has been done. On the contrary, Benjamin Netanyahu went to the United Nations with a map showing only Israel without Gaza and the West Bank.
Right.
The objective of the Israelis is to wipe out all the Palestinians from Palestine. This is why nothing has been done, because they want to do it quietly, because they don't want the world to feel.
But this time around, it definitely hasn't been done quietly. That's my point. I mean, you know, we're looking at this live, real time. That's what makes it so absolutely amazing, that we're watching it in real time as these massacres, as this genocide is taking place.
Yes, they've done it quietly until Hamas came out and said enough is enough. We're not going to accept to be assassinated, killed, and displaced without saying anything. We're not going to accept to be humiliated. And you take away the last hope that we have to build a state in Palestine. So the United Nations resolutions of right of return were not acknowledged and respected. The two-state solution has been completely dismissed. And you have a far-right government that is starving the prisoners and putting them in jail administratively without any justice. For that, they pushed the Palestinians to a limit where they thought, well, we can do anything we want because we're not accountable, and the Americans are with us. This is why the 7th of October came out as a reaction to all the injustice that the Palestinians have suffered, rightly, as Guterres said. He was very modest by saying 50 years, but it's 75 years since the Nakba, since the 1948. So because of that, the Israelis still thinking they can get away with killing and wounding 37,000 in just four weeks and bomb Gaza with an equivalent of almost two nuclear bomb, because each one 15,000, they've used 25,000 tons of explosives so far, and still get away with it.
Yes. Well, Yves, I mean, as we see people around the world standing up to their governments, do you think that there has been an increase in awareness about the reality of the Israeli regime now? And where do you think this will go? What does it mean now on the ground in your perspective?
There is no doubt there has been a growth of awareness of just how vile Israel and Zionism is. There's no doubt about that. The protests here in Montreal, biggest pro-Palestinian demonstration in Canadian history, over 50,000 on Saturday. And it was similar dynamics in most cities across the country, with more than 30 cities where they had protests, including way up far north, where there's lots of snow, there's an image of a couple dozen people protesting in Yellowknife. So there's no doubt that there's a growth in people being appalled at what Israel is doing. Where this goes, that's a little bit less clear. I think that the pro-Israel crowd has moved further and further to the right. They are becoming pretty openly racist at this point. They're calling for people to be deported from Canada for going to protest. They are saying that the reason there's these big protests is because there's basically too many non-white immigrants in the country. That is moving them further and further to the right of the political spectrum, whereas historically, in fact, lots of the left was very pro-Zionist. So that process has escalated rapidly in the recent weeks, a process that's been going on for years or decades even. But at the same time, let's be clear that the Israel lobby in this country is very powerful, continues to be very powerful. And obviously the U.S. empire shapes Canadian foreign policy, and within the Democratic Party, you're seeing similar dynamics in the U.S. where younger, generally darker-skinned people are critical of U.S. support. How far that goes in terms of really building a long-term political movement that will fundamentally reshape U.S.-Canadian support for Zionism, that's I think, a little bit less clear.
Well, Elijah, what do you think? Do you think that there we will look in history and see there was a prior to October 7th, how the world people looked at Zionism and the Zionist entity and how they reacted towards it. And then post October 7th, or now we're 1 month later, do you see this as being a major point of transition?
I do. October the 7th has created something completely different. It has created a state of uncertainty among the occupier settlers. This is why Israel is in deep crisis today. And this is why the Israelis are bombing Gaza, because they want to achieve something. They have promised all the Jews all over the world to come to Israel, where they can offer them a land that is not theirs, taken from the Palestinian, give them security, give them home, any home that they want that can take it from the Palestinian. And on the 7th of October, the Palestinian resistance offered a place for the settlers in a tent where there are 150,000 tents today in Eilat for all the settlers that used to live in occupied territory around the Gaza envelope and on the Lebanese borders. This is something that Israel has never seen before. Because of that, it blows up completely the idea of asking all the Jews around the world to come to Israel where they have a security. The Israelis today in the society no longer trust the army, no longer trust the government. That is an earthquake that the Palestinian resistance, no matter how damaged is Gaza, no matter how many people were killed, at least the Palestinian cause returned to the surface, and the Israelis today are no longer safe in a territory that doesn't belong to them, because the people of the land, the owners of the land, are saying, we want it back, we want to live in dignity, otherwise you will not be safe here.
All right, and on that note, we're out of time. I appreciate both of you being with me. Elijah Magner, journalist and political analyst out of Brussels. Eve Zingler, author and political activist out of Montreal. And thank you for being with us on another Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashemi, signing off for myself and all the group right here in Tehran.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day, from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz, every day, from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. Now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Bismillahir-Rahmanir Rahim.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
La ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah.
Answering your doubts and questions, and questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
Allah, who is Ar-Rahman? Allah, who is Al-Mannan? La ilaha illallah.
Please send us your emails through our email, which is englishradio@irib.ir.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio Call of Islam page. We welcome to another episode of the program Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. I am Atta, the host of this program. Sheikh Karimi is the special guest speaker for today's discussion. Assalamu alaikum, Sheikh. Welcome to the show.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah, and thank you for having me.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs on IRIB English Radio. You can send your questions to englishradio@irib.ir.
Okay, Sheikh Karimi, now one big question, an important question is that, can the Satan do Tawbah or repentance too? Is the way of Tawbah open to the Satan too or not?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Theoretically speaking, the answer might be positive, but practically the answer is negative. Satan is able, like any other person who commits a sin, to repent. But practically, based on what we understand from the verses of the Quran and the narrations, he is not ready to do that because of his arrogance and pride and haughtiness. As mentioned by Imam Ali alayhi salam in Sermon 192 of Nahj al-Balagha, he says that فَافْتَخَرَ عَلَىٰ آدَمَ بِخَلْقِهِ. The Satan boasts against Adam because of his creation. We know that Satan claimed that he is created from fire and Adam is created from the soil, and fire, has a kind of priority over the soil. And Imam Ali alayhi salam calls him إِمَامُ الْمُتَعَسَّبِينَ وَسَلَفُ الْمُسْتَكْبِرِينَ. I mean, when it comes to the arrogant, Satan is the first person in terms of being arrogant. And أَلَا تَرَوْنَ كَيْفَ سَغَّرَهُ اللَّهُ تَعَالَى بِتَكَبُّرِهِ. Did you not see that how Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala humiliated him because of his takabbur, because of his arrogance?
Yes.
وَعَدَّ لَهُ فِي الْآخِرَةِ سَعِيرًا. And his abode would be the hellfire in the hereafter. Now, we know, the story of Satan, the Iblis, that Iblis who did not prostrate before Adam,
yes,
is very interesting in that we should not be proud of our actions, even our good actions,
yes,
our acts of worship. According to some narrations, he worshipped Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala for 6,000 years. And if these 6,000 years is based on the years of the hereafter, it would be more than 100 billion years of this world. So for so many years he worshipped Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, but because of his pride he was not ready to prostrate before Adam alayhi salam, and then he decided to disobey Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
Yes.
Now there is an interesting narration which is related to this question. It's been mentioned that, this is in Bihar al-Anwar of Allama Majlisi, volume 60, page 281.